Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. Restore the balance of the universal mind. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee and come on bending knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat
Rabbi Shalom, Holy Angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I'm your hostess this evening. The music you were listening to there at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shem Shai, great little group that I met in the Sedona, Arizona area. And now they're just kind of traveling around the world, living their dream like a lot of us like to be doing and some of us are doing. And just a great amount of gratitude to them, by the way, for allowing me to use their music on the show. I tremendously appreciate what they've been producing and continuing to grow with. And I want to extend a welcome to everybody that's listening to us tonight, not only those here on Blog Talk Radio, but those also listening through TalkStream Live, StreamFinder, and PEN, also known as Paracounters Network, and also those that are catching our shows through archived versions, iTunes and TuneIn.com, and also through the YouTube version. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at the different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. And some weeks I will be discussing different aspects of how compassion is in our life, how it affects our life, and the different areas of compassion. And then some weeks I'm doing more exercises and practical implementations. And many times I have guests on the show so that you can learn about their work and how other things complement and work with compassion. Certainly tonight's no exception to that, as I have Judith Diana Winston on. And I'm also highlighting different musical artists along the way. Last year I had Grammy nominees Stephen Halpern, Peter Cater on the show. I've had Jill Mattson on the show, Claire Hedin on the show, Bruce Ciccarelli, who, if you missed that show, go back and catch his show in the archives. That was just fairly recently. And all of Bruce Ciccarelli's work, by the way, his music is free. It is something that he puts out as a gift to the universe. So it's worth going back and checking on that as well. In my own work, what I do is I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I've created the Genesis Clearing Statement, which if you've missed it, you can catch it in our archives. And I've also authored 4 books, the most recent being You, Me, Life Dreams, and its companion workbook, and then my first 2 books, Activating Compassion and its companion workbook. In addition, I've created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour, including workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. And you can follow all of the live events that you would need to register for through my event site, which is jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And I have a lot of things that I'm getting ready to add. As a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to do some more touring around here very soon. The autumn equinox time, I will be in the Seattle, Washington area doing an entire weekend event, as well as probably some other shorter events as well during that time. And then I'm also going to be looking at around Halloween, first weekend of November timeframe, being back on the East Coast in New Jersey, and also look for some additional venues showing up in the Pennsylvania area, and just a lot of wonderful things coming up in that region for you as well. So there's going to be a lot of things getting added. You can follow those on my website, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com as well. And just a reminder, if you enjoy the show this evening, make certain that you tell your friends, family, significant others, you know, share it out there on the social media and anybody that you feel inspired to share it with, really, because I know when I'm sharing shows, what happens is almost always somebody comes back and goes, oh, that's such an interesting show, or wow, I was really wondering about that topic, or I really wanted to learn more about that. So you never know whose life you might impact just by clicking share with people. And they can come and listen to it in our archives at the same link. They can find all the archive shows on my page of the Main Street Universe tab on my website. And so there's lots of options for them, as well as it's available as a podcast at iTunes, as well as TuneIn.com. And then I also create a YouTube version, which they can find on my YouTube channel as well. Now, before we get started on everything tonight, those that have listened in before, you know I like to delve into the 72 Names of God, which is a book by Yehuda Berg, who's a Kabbalah master. And I love his work because he takes these big, giant concepts, he takes these different aspects of divine essence and brings it into our everyday lives. And it's so applicable. It's so applying to the different things that we're dealing with in life. And this actually goes up also on my page of the Main Street Universe tab on my website. And certainly you can find that there. That way, if you want to go back and look at it during the week, you can do so. So what we've got tonight for you from Yehuda is the name of God in the common form is Sharing the Flame. And I love this one. I absolutely love this aspect of God. And his message or his initial little message here is, a single candle lessens the darkness of a large auditorium. But no amount of darkness can extinguish the flickering flame. Even if the darkness were expanded, it would have no effect on the candle's radiance. And the insight he provides here is, darkness and evil are powerless in the presence of light. The relationship between light and darkness in the everyday world reveals a profound secret of spirituality. Darkness can only exist in the light's absence. Sharing the wisdom of these 72 names with another soul is akin to lighting a candle in our darkened world, for the knowledge and the letters themselves are the stuff and substance of spiritual light. The more we share these tools, the more we diminish our own selfish nature and the darkness throughout the world. The letters of this name are derived from a biblical verse on the tree of life, and its power is to bring immortality and endless joy. Kabbalah teaches that tree of life is a coded reference to the unseen upper world, where 99% of reality resides. This infinite hidden dimension is the true source of all joy, wisdom, and enlightenment. And the meditation he provides here is, concentrate on sharing light with friends, family, and the entire family of humankind. Take this name with you out into the real world and share these tools with others. Ask for the strength to walk the talk. In your mind's eye, envisage openings and opportunities in the world for the global dissemination of this ancient wisdom. Know that this name is arousing the forces of immortality and increasing joy in the world. Expect and demand nothing less. And again, the common name here tonight is Sharing the Flame, and the formal name is Mem Lamed He. Mem Lamed He. And this spans not only from Kabbalah, but whatever your belief is, when we share the tools, when we share the light, when we share the wisdom, it's a universal wisdom, no matter what the belief is. And we're not meant to hoard or to hold on to it. We're meant to share it. The more we do, the greater the light is going to get in the world. Now, a little something here to think about before we head on break, just to lead into our topic tonight. What fears do you have? Are you willing to face them? What if you had no choice but to face them? Most people try to avoid their fears. They take off in an opposite direction. They deny or ignore them, or perhaps even try to justify them. However, many of us have thought about the concept of what we might do if there was no escaping them. In a sense, I feel that these times are upon us. As the energy elevates and evolves on our planets and within us, there is a concept that we will see our greatest fears as well. This is much like the summer solstice when the most amount of light casts the greatest shadow. Times are upon us where the laws of the universe are synchronizing with our actions, and we are likely to see less and less lapse between action and result. People will not be able to run and hide as they've done in the past from their fears. Diana Winston recently published a book on this very aspect of traveling to sacred sites and facing fears in an entrancing journey of these sites. It is based on a story of a sort of universal diary that works differently in each person's hands that has it. This is interesting to me because it parallels the workings of the universe and that all we have access to, we all have access, that is, to the same universal wealth of knowledge. Yet, we tend to experience that knowledge and the insights we get, the lessons we learn, they all become customized to our own journey. And we go from place to place or perhaps teacher to teacher and class to class or whatever other parallel you'd like to use in this. And each one sheds a light on who we are, showing us both our fears and our strengths. And it brings the awareness that in facing our greatest fears, we will also find our greatest strengths. To take such a journey is to really embrace the path that one has chosen in this life. People seem to frequently wonder things like, how do I develop my powers? How can I learn about such and such? Is this the right thing for me to do or the right person for me to be with? To this, we must learn to pause and to listen. Is the fear that is before us one of warning to take another direction, or one that is asking if you are truly ready to move forward? There are many dimensions to fears and how to face them, but perhaps instead of seeing them as something dark and scary, we can see them as those teachers that will propel us to some of the greatest strengths and heights we have ever known. What are the fears that are active in your life? Do you face them or try to run away? How does fear work in your life? Have you embraced it as a great teacher? This week, our guest focuses on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books of blind, deaf, and defensive. This reminds us that all of our experiences have something to give us if we're willing to be open to what they have to offer us. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I will have Judith Diana Winston with us, and she's going to be sharing her work in The Keeper of the Diary. And the song I have for you during our break is called I See You. It's by Claire Hedin. And if you'd like to find out more about Claire's work, you can certainly do so at www.clairehedin.com. And we're going to take this short break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Around
Welcome back. You are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and my name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George. I'm your hostess this evening. The song you were just listening to is called I See You. It's by Claire Hedin, and I greatly appreciate her allowing me to use her work on the show here. You can certainly check out more of her work at www.clairehedin.com, and that's spelled CLAREHEDIN.com. And I'd like to bring on my guest tonight, Judith Diana Winston, a visionary photo artist, writer, life mentor. She has worked in the film industry as an actress, script supervisor, fashion photographer. Diana authored Meditative Magic, The Pleiadian Glyphs, and also The Keeper of the Diary. She combines her spiritual quest with her abilities as an artist and communicator, focused on understanding mankind's origin and destiny, which led to almost 10 years visiting, photographing, and learning about many of Earth's ancient megalithic sacred sites. Diana's travels also drew her to research archaeological texts, mythology, and channeled material related to these places. She considers herself a mystic and believes that the entire planet is going through a dimensional shift with the purpose to change and elevate consciousness and to work toward healing. Diana points out that as we vibrate at a higher frequency, it forces us to face our deepest fears as well as offering opportunities to realize personal and collective dreams. We will be looking tonight at her work with The Keeper of the Diary, and you can also learn more about Diana's work at www.thekeeperofthediarybook.com. I'm going to go ahead and bring her on. Diana, welcome to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Well, thank you, Jessie. It's a pleasure to be here, and I've enjoyed your show so far.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate greatly your time this evening and being willing to come on here and share with all of the listeners through all the different avenues your work and what you're doing. And, you know, I start off, and it's funny, sometimes I look at requests I get along the way for guests and suggestions for guests, and I don't often bring on people that are strictly just authors sometimes, but then as I delved into your work, I went, oh my goodness, there's so many fascinating things here about this person, and they have such an interesting wealth of knowledge and a wonderful style of presentation in what they're doing. And so I obviously couldn't resist and say, please come through here. But I would love for you to start off by sharing with us a little more about who you are, what your journey was that brought you into writing the books and doing the work that you're doing.
Okay, that's a big bite right there. I often think about it, and people have asked, you know, that question, like, you know, what prompted your spiritual journey, or how, where did things all begin? And as I've thought about it, I've come to realize that in a sense, and I think there are probably many of your audience that would relate to this as well, I've always been on a quest. I don't think that when I was a child it was so defined that I really understood it, but there was sort of this feeling that there was something bigger, larger than I was being presented by or with, you know, by my family and the world that I was growing up in. Somehow there was something bigger and larger, and I wanted to understand that, or actually felt I had to understand that. And so that kind of propelled me out into the world, not really knowing what I was looking for, but with definitely, you know, my scope wide open. And it took me through a number of different careers that you so nicely read. you know, working in the film business, which was fascinating and continues to fascinate me, working as a fashion photographer. I never really even thought to be a writer. It just, I was one of those people that was always being told by psychics that I was going to be a writer at some point in my life. And I always thought to myself, well, I guess I could be. I certainly read enough, but I don't really have anything to write about. And then some circumstances came together, really because my life was kind of falling apart in many senses. But so often when those kind of things happen, if we don't totally lose it by the fact that things aren't working out as we had planned, we see that something else, another door opens. You know, it's that idea, one door closes, another door opens. Anyway, for me, the door that opened was an opportunity to go to Egypt, which I had never even been out of the continental U.S. Now, I think I'd been to Canada because I grew up in Michigan, which is close by. And that trip to Egypt was more a trip of return. It was such a feeling of familiarity, and the things that I connected with and the teacher that I had the opportunity to travel with and the ways in which he described some of the sites that we were seeing, which was quite different than our Egyptian guide. All of that sort of awakened something in me that I think was always there but slumbering. And I ended up going back a year and a half later with that same teacher as his photographer for a group of people traveling through Egypt, Jordan, Israel, and Greece. And it was when I came back from that second trip that there was a story tugging on me. And that story is the genesis of what became the book, The Keeper of the Diary. And it also started what you sort of touched upon, which was this idea of who are we really? You know, what are our origins? Who is mankind? What is mankind? And I guess these are really the kinds of questions that I had been asking myself about myself, but not so formally during perhaps my growing up years. And the reason they got so stimulated was, of course, ancient Egypt is very ancient. And when you go to the sites there and you see the sophistication of them, it absolutely throws aside any ideas you have that we are now at the most sophisticated time of the human race on the planet. You know that that can't possibly be true because these places, and then, of course, I went on to learn more about them and to travel and see more of them, but the genesis all came from this trip to Egypt. And the more that I learned, the more that I was even more deeply convinced that the history that we think of as our own is missing a lot of really important pieces. I traveled around, in that trip it was just in the Middle East, Egypt, Jordan. But Jordan is a pretty interesting place. I went to the ancient sunken city of Petra, which has a very interesting history. Israel, which we all know has a checkered past, but certainly an interesting one. Certainly the Hebrew people go back quite a ways. And Greece, though more modern, you know, also has a quality to it that is seems to be at least as sophisticated as we are. But I think it was when I became so fascinated that I ended up traveling to places like Peru and Bolivia and Easter Island and different of the ancient sites in England and Scotland that and began to read about them, that I began to understand that it wasn't just a few places on the planet where there were these ancient and mysterious and almost impossible to explain by what we know about them places. For instance, in Peru, and some of you have probably seen some of the, you know, In Search Of programs. But, I mean, it's really amazing to see some of these sites with these giant boulders that are hundreds of megatons heavy that come from two mountain valleys away. And you go, we couldn't build them today with all the sophisticated equipment we have. So something was going on a long time ago that we aren't really being told about in our education, you know, in the books that we read. So I just became more and more compelled to search in that arena. And the story that began tugging on me when I came back from Egypt, and actually I began at that point, continued being written on and off for like 25 years because I didn't know that I would continue traveling. And as I traveled, it was like new pieces of this puzzle kept coming into the picture. And the book is sort of divided into two parts. It's a story of a woman, a fashion photographer. I gave a lot of my own story to my main character, Cassie, who goes to Egypt and to take an assignment. And it isn't even one that she really wants to take. It's kind of out of her realm of things, but she ends up taking it. And on the second day of her journey, a diary mysteriously turns up in her camera case, and she's very, of course, shocked to find this strange object because this camera case hasn't been out of her hands pretty much since she left the U.S., and here she is her second day in Egypt. But it's also that there's something strangely familiar about the diary. I mean, that's how the book starts out, is with her discovering this diary and touching it and feeling like an electric shock goes up her hand. And there's something, it's like it's a strange object, but she feels such an affinity to it. And at the same time, you were talking about earlier, you know, the idea of fear. She feels very excited, but also very fearful, because it's such a strange feeling to have about something you've never seen before. So she starts to read the diary, and as she continues, she ends up discovering that it was written by a young Israeli man found in the desert suffering from amnesia, who keeps the diary to remember who he is. And she's absolutely riveted by the story because the diary, as this young man David begins to remember who he is, it goes back all the way to a lifetime in Atlantis. And she's compelled to read the story. At the same time, she's kind of afraid of it because it's sort of the things she's reading are sort of shaking up her world and her worldview. And for me, I mean, a lot of people have said, well, did you actually find a diary? And for a long time, I didn't realize that people just assumed the diary was true. While there are many things in the diary that are true, and, of course, true depends on your definition of true, meaning did they really happen, or are they true on a very deep level of, like, what are the deeper truths of our lives? Anyway, the diary was not actually something that I found, but it became a vehicle to pass on a lot of wisdom that I acquired over the years of traveling and the research that I did. And the young man who wrote the diary, who I have that wrote the diary, is actually based on a person that I heard about but went out of my way not to find out too much about, because I really wanted to use him as a jumping-off point and not get into telling a person's real story and having to stick to the facts and get his permission. But the part of it that is true is that it's based on a young man who, as a child, had these experiences where he would spout, he would have like fits, say at about 3 years old, he would have these fits and spout word-perfect sections in Aramaic from the Old Testament that were speeches of King David's. Now, these stopped happening to him when he was about, it happened for about 2 years, and by the time he was about 4 and a half, it stopped, and he didn't seem to remember it. And I was told about this with the spiritual teacher that I had traveled with, and then I became so fascinated, he sent me a newspaper article about it, and that was at the point at which I felt, between the things that had happened in Egypt, and this was before I really started doing the traveling, but I knew that I needed to see these places, I needed to feel the energy of them, because there was some teaching there for me, something that was really calling me, and I wasn't sure what it was. And like I said, it turned out to be a lot about who are we? Who are we who built these places with technologies that we can't even duplicate today? So you can see there are so many elements coming in from so many directions that, and then when I heard the story of this man who I call David, it just kind of gave a whole nother focus point to the story that I was going to tell. So I stopped learning more about him, but there are certain prophecies about roles that he's playing in the Middle East, you know, sort of behind the scenes. And sort of you can see with all of these things that life was putting me in the middle of, and the fact that it was sort of forming itself into a story, suddenly all these people who had told me you're going to write sometime in your life, I now had something to write about. So I've kind of taken you off in a few different directions. I hope not too many that I've lost you.
That's okay, because, I was making some notes here, because you tap on a lot of really good points for people to keep in mind, which is a lot of times we are always on this quest from the very beginning. I think that's part of human nature and human existence. Some of us awaken to that quest and become aware of it. Some of us don't. Some of us have things that trigger us to actively participate in that quest. And you also brought up the thing that I think is very appropriate to, especially right here and now with all the universal transformation going on, which is a lot of people are feeling like things are falling apart in their life right now and things are not going as planned for a lot of people. But we have that choice, and oftentimes when this is happening, it is specifically to open a new door, oftentimes to redirect us back onto that quest that we may or may not be aware that we're doing. That awakened slumber, I think that's something that many people are feeling today. They feel like they're awakening to purpose or mission or path or whatever that is for them. Many points here, and I think that is the key, is maybe like David, your character in the book, where, you know, when we're born into life, we're born into a sort of state of amnesia. And
well, it's very interesting that you say that, because, yes, David has amnesia, and the main character is actually the woman photographer who is named Cassie, who I gave part of my story to. And the interesting thing for her is that she thinks she knows who she is. She thinks she knows exactly what her life is about, and she reluctantly takes this job in Egypt. That part wasn't exactly the same as me, but the fact that my life was kind of coming apart at the seams and I had this opportunity, and the same thing, I gave her that part of the story, that her career is not working and she basically accepts this job to shoot a slideshow of these people traveling on a spiritual journey through the Middle East. And she takes it because she needs the money. She really isn't interested. She really thinks she knows who she is, and she has her direction set. And she's the one that actually, David is remembering who he is in the sense that he physically has amnesia. But she's remembering who she is when she doesn't even know that she had amnesia. As she reads this diary and travels with this group, things start to get triggered in her. Memories from childhood, things that she has repressed so deeply that she just doesn't have a clue. So as she finishes the diary by the end of this three-week journey through Egypt, Jordan, Israel, and Greece. And during that time, she has so many experiences triggered by things that she's reading in the book that bring back memories that open up parts of her life that she thought weren't even true, that she thought were kind of like dreams, or that she just... And I think that that level of amnesia is what's really up for people today. And I would say up for our culture in general, that we are sort of a culture suffering from amnesia. It's like, who are we really? You know, the things that have been our biggest concerns, our biggest desires, are turning out for a lot of people, well, first of all, they're being taken away, which is creating like, oh, my God, I'm not my house, I'm not my car, I'm not my boyfriend or girlfriend. So then who is that? I'm not the job that I had. Then who am I? And in a way, Cassie goes on this journey, but even deeper and more metaphysically. And so she's a great character for people to travel with. Because as her life sort of falls apart and then kind of comes back together in a new way, it's a great it's a hero's journey. In this case, a heroine's journey. And I think it's all of our journeys. And I think she's like a great traveling companion.
I love that you bring in this aspect with her that, you know, she thinks she already knows it, because we also see a lot of that in society today, where there's a lot of spiritual people out there and they think, I know it all, I've got it all down, you can't teach me anything. But as we know, there's always more to learn. And that quest of who am I, it doesn't ever really end, in a sense. You know, maybe it does once we leave this physical incarnation or something, but, you know, here again, you've got these great different pieces, because you also mentioned with David that, you know, he lost, you know, he had all this connection up until, you know, through around the age of 3, 4.5, and that is a cognitive state where we seem to physically disconnect spiritually. And triggers that come up for us later in life go back to that age where we were still very connected and still very receptive and learning things in this amazing, open, unfiltered way. And these dynamics that you talk about are really, I think, fascinating, because even though you put them in a story format, there's so much in these dynamics that parallel what happens to us on a spiritual path, what happens to us when we're resistant or growing. And I think a lot of people feel maybe like the lead character, Cassie, I'm being forced into this or I'm being forced into that right now. I don't feel like I have a big choice because I've got to go take this for money or something. And then they end up with these connections or they end up with these additional journeys.
And there's possibilities that would have never been had their life stayed on the track that they had wanted it to, but by comparison was such a smaller, more limited track than what life has in store for them. I mean, Cassie could, what's interesting about Cassie's journey is right from the beginning when she first gets offered the job in Egypt, her first answer is, no, I don't shoot sideshows. I'm a fashion photographer. That's not what I do. And then the money concern comes in, and so she finally says, okay, I'll go, but I'm not going to enjoy myself. But I'll go, you know, I need the money and I'll do it. But I'm not really, you know, there in my presence. I'm just doing a job. And then both the diary, which we could call life, and the journey itself begin to work on her and begin to open her up in ways that are scary for her because she did think she knew who she was. And that her life path was, you know, pretty clear to her if she just had to keep putting one foot in front of the other. But instead, what ends up opening to her is far greater possibilities. And I think that's really the truth for all of us. And that's the whole thing about be here now, you know, Eckhart Tolle's living, being present. How else can we really know what our life is or what life in general is if we're so stuck on having a mental idea of what it is? We can't experience it.
Very well said, and I think that is a big fear. I think that whether we're looking at it from the sense of I don't know who I am, I'm going to find out I don't know who I am, or I'm going to have to face some truths in myself that I might not like, or, you know, there's so many little pieces that unravel there in our everyday lives of realizing that, oh, life isn't what they said it was going to be. Just because I get out there and work a lot of hours doesn't mean that I'm necessarily going to have all of these things. And it does take these twists and turns, and it's I think that openness to the journey is such an important key in dealing with these, and I've learned along the way, I know myself, that sometimes where I'm most resistant is what I most need to do. Sometimes what seems the scariest to me is also the most exciting and is also what I most need to face.
Well, there's that whole thing about, you know, your greatest within your greatest weakness is your greatest strength. And I feel like I continuously actually learn this in my life. You know, I think that I've learned it because, you know, something has come up and it's been very disruptive and it's been very difficult. And then, you know, like the phoenix, I rise from the ashes. But then things that isn't the end of the story. You know, the story continues. And that, in a sense, it's funny because as I was writing this book and it went through, you know, it was a 25-year journey, as it turned out. Never would have expected that. Never would have thought I would have stuck with it. I mean, it was put away and brought up many different times. But one of the questions I remember thinking to myself at one point when I was going through a lot of physical challenges, and I was writing the book, and this was before Cassie had really come clear to me, but David and his story was very clear. And I thought to myself, the opening lines from David Copperfield, which are, I'll paraphrase it, something like, whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life or merely a player in it, these pages will surely tell. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to be sick and I can't have a life, then I'll do it vicariously through David. It was just an interesting thing to play with. I mean, I got better and, you know, things continued, thank goodness, and the adventure is still on. But that question of will we be the heroes of our own lives, when I've spoken to groups, I bring that up frequently because in many ways that's a choice, and it's more a choice about our attitude than it is about any particular thing that we do or don't do.
I agree. It is tremendously an attitude aspect there. And I think that oftentimes that strength or that hero within us is waiting to come out. It's begging to be active in our life. And we don't listen to it and we don't use it until we come face to face with some of these deeper fears.
Absolutely.
I mean, as they say, fear is a powerful, powerful motivator for us. That's when we dig deeper than ever to find our creative means for having things work. And there.
Well, sort of forces us as it takes us to our edge.
Yes. Yes. And it does, and you talk about you rise up again from those ashes, so to say, over and over again. And, you know, I've actually posed the question many times lately, like, how many times do you need to prove to yourself that you can succeed? You know, you don't have to keep creating these circumstances just to prove to yourself you can succeed, just to be your own hero. But they are certainly the most, I think, oftentimes meaningful aspects that come in our life, because when we conquer these fears, when we overcome them, when we face the challenges that are involved in this aspect, there's such a opening that happens, I would say, on a spiritual level. It's almost like kind of in alignment with your theme here. It's an awakening. And it's a remembering of who we are, which is a creator, which is divine essence that overcomes anything and everything.
And I always say that one of the main, if not the main, sort of theme of my book is choice. And I think, you know, I mean, because that's, you know, what philosophers will say, what separates mankind from the rest of the animal kingdom is the ability to choose. But what good is that ability if you don't actually know you have it? And I think for a lot of people, or maybe for everybody at certain points, we don't realize that we actually have, that I won't even say our circumstances, but that the way we're thinking is a choice, and that we can take a different choice, which will open us to completely different possibilities. But we have to make that choice.
And I think the choice itself can be scary. I think oftentimes the choice itself is scarier than the path, because people get very focused on the right, the wrong, you know, good, bad, all of these things in that process of choice. And I'm really glad that you bring that up, because when we sit in fear, it seems like too often we forget at that point that we have choice.
Exactly. Exactly. Fear immobilizes us. And, you know, there are so many philosophers who would say there's no such thing as a bad choice. You know, whatever choice you make, commit to it. You know, just go for it, because on a very large scale level, it probably doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not talking about the choice to do something that would hurt somebody or something like that, but I mean, if it's a choice of, like, should I live in this city or that city, or this neighborhood or that neighborhood, or go to this place or this job or something, I think it's not so much the thing itself or the place itself, but it's how we use it. So there probably really aren't any bad choices. There's just ones that are more honest than others. If we tune in, like, okay, what do I really want to do here? As opposed to, like, oh my God, I just don't know. I guess I'll do this.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, we're not really making a choice. We're just kind of like, we're not taking responsibility for making a choice. So I think if we make a choice by taking responsibility for it, there can't be a bad choice, because there's always going to be gifts. There's always going to be learnings from whichever choice we take.
I really agree on that, and I think that that is the key. I think oftentimes we come in to learn these lessons, and we're going to learn no matter which direction we take. it's kind of like, do you want to learn lesson A, B, or C? Pick
right.
Which one you want to go through, because they're all going to hold lessons to them. And I find more and more it seems like we're kind of guided or put into situations. And here again, people almost feel like, well, I didn't have a choice to go this direction. But yet I then question, but did not your soul...
Right. Well, who are we talking about has the choice? Are we talking about what we would call, you know, the conscious self, the ego self, or are we talking about the high self? And like in Cassie's story or my story, you know, this part about my career sort of falling apart and I moved from one city to another city for reasons that I thought were going to be helpful to my career, but everybody else thought made absolutely no sense. And in terms of being helpful to my career, they were absolutely right. It was totally not helpful, and it was sort of the end of my career as a fashion photographer. However, if I hadn't made that move, and which ended that career, I would have never gone to Egypt, more than likely. And if I hadn't gone to Egypt, I probably wouldn't have ended up taking the quest I ended up taking on, of traveling to these other sites. I wouldn't have written this book. I wouldn't have written the other book, the Glyph book, which is the meditation, the meditative magic, which is very much related to the Keeper of the Diary and kind of popped out in the middle of it. So sometimes, you know, there's that saying, sometimes not getting what you want is the best thing that can happen to you. And... You know, we've all had those experiences that afterwards we go, oh, thank God, I didn't get what I wanted, the boyfriend, the girlfriend, whatever. But I think if we can just be quiet enough in our mind, life, our high self, however you want to put it, life really does lead us, even when we think that we're abandoned, because the things that we think are so important and are so deeply our heart's desire aren't coming true for us, And sometimes that's exactly the place to just take a pause.
And I think that's it. I think so many times our, if we want to say our guides, our angels, divine spirit, whatever, is trying to say, come here, come here.
Right.
I want you to come over here.
And if you didn't listen the first time, here, let me give you a little nudge.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now it's going to have to hurt because you're not listening to me. And I've been in that position many times of I want this to work. I want this to happen. I want, you know, and it doesn't happen, and it just gets harder and harder. And it's like, but I came here to help, or I came here to do this. And now everything is tossing me out the door and sending me in another direction. I feel like that in my situation. I mean, I came to where I am right now to be close to my mom in her later years. And the universe, divine, whatever, has said, oh, no, 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 you're going another direction. And it's been a hard...
Oh, it's very disconcerting.
But now, and you know, and like you say, love relationships and things like that, and they've been kind of pretty much tossed out the door, too. And it's interesting because now I sit in this place and I feel like, wow, I'm receiving this amazing life right now. And that's an exciting place to be in. It's scary, you know. It's not that it's all cushy, safe, secure at the moment, but it's an amazing place to sit when you, as you say, stop and quiet the mind and listen and say, I wonder what happens if I just surrender to this experience.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, that's why I wrote Cassie the way that I did, or she wrote herself, I would say. She told me what to write about her, because this is the journey that she continuously goes on, which is things, it's sort of all having to break apart piece by piece for her to be quiet enough to see what comes next, because it continuously does not, even when she starts to get a little fire behind her and thinks she really understands where she's going, it breaks apart again. And I think that's, it's the analogy, it's the story for all of us. And that's why she is on, that is the hero's journey, I think. That we can't really, it doesn't come from our minds, you know. It's not something that we think up. It's something that we're open enough to, that we make the change. And it's actually a quote from the book that a teacher of hers says to her, it's learning to think with your heart.
Yes, and it's interesting, the more I listen to you talk about the hero's journey in this, it's definitely doesn't seem like this is the hero that we'd normally associate when we talk about things like the more ego side, perhaps, that is like, yes, I conquered this, I overcame this, so much as it is the soul self getting to live through the human existence.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's really a good way to put it, because I guess without even realizing it, that's what I really mean by the hero or the heroine's journey. It's what is the hero, heroine part of ourselves? It's our soul. It's not our ego or our mind. So the soul would be more closely associated with the heart. So it's the journey of the deep self,
mm-hmm.
not the journey of the sort of superficial cultural aspect of ourselves. And I think
right.
that these times are about, and what they're calling on us to do and to awaken in us and to change into. Because the world as it's been up until now, in these most recent hundreds of years, it's reached the end game. It's not working anymore. So that type of hero that goes out and conquers the world, that's not the answer anymore, if it ever was.
Right. It's not that standard thing like, hey, I've rescued this person or that person, but it's that surrendering process. And this is actually something that you do delve into a little bit in your work as well, this, you know, what is happening on our entire planet and what's happening with this dimensional shift. And it seems to me like maybe your story is also playing into what's happening on that greater planetary level.
Yeah, I think that it is. And it's very interesting to me because, like I said, I started this 25 years ago. And so things were not nearly as clear cut as they are today. You know, pretty much everybody realizes, you know, even people who may not consider themselves spiritual or on any kind of spiritual journey or any of those words will not be part of their jargon, are just realizing that somehow life as they've known it is not seeming to work, and the world around them is changing whether they like it or not. And it's funny because I've described the book as, you know, it's a fictional tale. It's about our past, but it's really a story about now, because it's really Cassie's journey is like every person's journey. Now, some people will get that on a more cognitive level; they'll understand it better. But whether they understand it or not, I really think that's what's up.
Yeah, and I very much agree with that. These changes are inevitable, and I think, here again, a lot of people are fearing the changes that are happening in our life. But a lot of these things are, it seems to me as I observe, on one hand, there's more restriction coming down because the evolution is outgrowing that restriction at this point in time. And so it's natural for it to try to get a tighter grip because it knows it's losing its grip. And that comes back to the surrendering. You know, it's going to be forced to surrender either way and let go of that control. And what we're realizing is through this process that these structures are not working. You know, as you say, it starts off on the past aspects, but it's really applying to the present, which, of course, is going to affect our future in things. And that comes back to what you were mentioning as a key point in all of this, as far as a lesson that comes out of your writings, is choice. And it's our choice to get beat up and to try to hold on tight and try to control, or to turn around and let go and surrender to the process and say, okay, if I let go, then all of this stuff that's dissolving because it doesn't work in the more evolved space that we're headed into.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I've written a fictional story with a character that, you know, is a larger-than-life character, because that's, in a way, how what we learn from. You know, if you have a character that's too small, well, then it's not exciting for people. So, of course, things are going to be a little more exaggerated for Cassie and her arc of who she starts out as, and I don't want to give story points away, and who she ends up is perhaps, you know, much broader and story-like. But in a sense, it's exactly what you said. It is the story that we're all involved in, and it's about things have to... There is a British I'm trying to remember what his name is. Well, it doesn't matter. He has this thing which I always love to quote called the theory of dissipating structures. And it is that things have to fall apart in order to come together, come back together at a higher level of integration. And I think that's exactly what's going on collectively and personally. And we can either, you know, kind of go with that and be a little easy on ourselves, or we can go struggling and fighting it the whole way. But basically, that's the journey. That's just the journey that's unfolding on the planet and maybe throughout the cosmos. Who knows? But for sure, that's the journey that's unfolding on the planet, falling apart, so that we can come back together at a higher level of integration, because this one is powed out.
And that's what they say about all the so-called star seeds that are here in these different generations with the indigos and rainbow children and crystal children and all of these different groupings, so to say, of souls, is they came here to do some of the hard work of tearing things down specifically so that we could rebuild on this higher level. And I think that that is the hard thing for people, that it's kind of like, if you never broke the glass jar, would you ever have found a mosaic? Because you couldn't have put the pieces back together in that way unless the jar broke or the glass broke in the first place. And then what beautiful thing did you end up with from that? So it is this constant creating, and that ties back into your story of aspects of fear as well. We're afraid to let go of what is shattering and what is breaking and what is dissolving and what needs to be let go of.
The interesting thing that many people know and many people don't know is they think that the opposite of love is hate, and it really isn't. The opposite of love is fear. Hate is just one of the faces of fear. And so if you think of, okay, so what is really going on now and what is really the bigger choice? What do we want to choose? There's really only like two choices. And probably in the bigger picture, it's all one choice anyway, because going back to your analogy of the light and the dark, in the end, the light, no matter how small it is, will persevere. But when it comes down to the different situations in our lives, where are we going to go? Are we going to go to fear or to love? And the love is the acceptance. The love is the like, okay, here I am. I'm loving myself, if nothing else, enough to let go. Because fear, that's where all the different, that's the dark side. I mean, that's the Darth Vader. That's where all the different things that we have names for, hate, anger, all the things we call negative or bad or whatever, they all just really come from fear. And they're just ways of acting, pretending to be powerful when we're really scared.
Yes, and I agree, and I have a couple of comments in the chat room that making the connection there of we descend to the light, as to say, so we return and descend to learn a lesson while helping. Well, their term was the muggles. and we go down to help the mundanes, and then we ascend back up. So the people that aren't necessarily awakened or aware of their path, sometimes we have to kind of crush these things down to help them awaken. in the process. They said, forgive the slang on there. I love your analogy of Darth Vader, though, because that's really a fun analogy when we look at the darkness side of things, because Darth Vader was like the rejected child. You know, it was the child that wasn't heard, or the piece that wasn't paid attention to or wasn't accepted and was kind of cast off. And that's exactly what we do oftentimes with our fears, is we don't accept them. We reject them. We toss them off. We toss them away. And then they become this so-called dark, ugly, scary.
Yeah. And what was Darth Vader? I mean, it was just this phony thing. You know, it was this metallic, you know, thing that wasn't, in other words, it wasn't even a big scary thing. It just looked that way. Because underneath it was the rejected child who put up this big defense.
When I posted the blog post for this show about fear, I actually had some comments come back, and they were sharing a story. Somebody had shared a story in regards to this, that basically there was this person and there was this demon that was there, and they kept trying to reject the demon, and they kept trying to push it away. And every time they did that, it got bigger and scarier and bigger and scarier. And so then Krishna was standing guard, and the demon came up, and Krishna says, "And what do you want?" And every night he kept saying, "What do you want? What do you want?" It kept growing smaller and smaller and smaller. And then Krishna shows the person, "Is this your demon?" And it's all tiny. And the person's like, "Yes, but when I saw it, it was so big." And he said, "That's because you tried to run. That's because you refused to accept that demon."
Yeah, I guess when we really try to reject something, in a sense, what we're doing is we're giving it power. We're just, that rejection is like feeding it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think that that's the interesting thing, and that, you know, comes full circle back around to when we just surrender. That's the acceptance process. But I think the challenge in all of this, and maybe it plays into your character of Cassie as well, is that we oftentimes feel like when we surrender to this process, when we accept things, that we're almost programmed to believe that it's a giving up, or
right,
that it's
saying that we're lessening ourselves in some way.
We're lessening ourselves by this surrender, instead of realizing that really what we're lessening is the resistance, that it doesn't mean that we're giving in to the almighty government
because it goes back to the idea of the ego, you know, or what's been called the ego. And the ego is that, you know, I mean, I don't know what the exact definition, you know, when it first was developed by Freud, but the ego is the false self. It's not who we really are. So when we're talking about giving up, what is it we think we're really giving up, or what is it we are giving up? Isn't it really, if it isn't happening, then it must not be true or correct or right or something. So if we're giving up this thing because it's not working for us, we're not really giving up something that's real. We're giving up an idea of what we think is the right thing or the best thing or who we truly are. But obviously, if it's not working, if it's not holding, then it isn't real. It is the stuff of the quote-unquote ego. You know, I'm not really fond of that word. It just popped up. I'm not really fond of it because it just gets tossed around too much. But it's what I want to say is it's I have a picture of a person in my head as I'm saying this, holding a mask in front of their face. And that mask is like the mask we show the world, or we think we need to show the world, or we're trained as little kids that this is who we need to be. But sometimes that gets very hard to keep holding up that mask. And so I think you're saying the surrender, in a sense, is like, okay, I can put it down. Uh-oh, that means I'm just going to have to be me. Oh, geez, is that going to be enough? Is that going to be okay? Did I just, like, let go of something really valuable? I mean, these are all sort of cultural ideas and cultural images, this stuff about who are we really and who are we supposed to be. And really, who we're supposed to be is who we actually are, not some idea.
Very well said. And I think that's the thing, because we oftentimes are so programmed into believing we're supposed to be something, or we have to be a certain way or act a certain way or things like that. And I think a lot of us are holding masks on and don't even realize that we're holding the mask up. We don't even realize that we're wearing that around. And I think your character Cassie was like that. She thought she knew it all. She didn't realize she still had these masks. And I think sometimes...
she was clueless. She was clueless. And as it begins to break apart for her, she is, terrified, because she really did think she had it all figured out. And yet... life is here presenting her with completely opposite experiences that she even begins at a certain point. She has almost exactly the same dream as this David writes in the diary. And it's a very profound dream, and it's actually a dream that I had during my travels, and it was a life-changing dream, and its message was very clear. And when she has that, she flips out. She takes and she tosses the diary across the room, and she goes, who's messing with me? Somebody's messing with me, that put this diary. She goes back and forth between realizing that she's been given something profound and that it is showing things to her about her life and about life in general that are just amazing and life-altering. She goes back and forth between that and this very sort of guarded, come on, give me a break. This is just, baloney. Somebody's pulling something off on me. I mean, it's like she keeps going back to that place of the mask, of feeling, I guess, being afraid to be too vulnerable. Because that might mean she's not who she thought she was. But then as things progress, she realizes that who she really is so much greater than who she thought she was. And I think that's really the truth for all of us. But you have to kind of be willing to go through the rabbit hole.
Yes, and I think you just hit on what some of the key fears are for everybody, or for most people that I've come across anyways, and that is experiencing the profound and experiencing the self and being able to be vulnerable enough to get that experience. That can be a tremendous process to go through in those two things. And it's like we talk all of these things about how we're seeking the profound and we're seeking self, and when it comes down to it and we're offered that, how many people are really willing to let go? And be vulnerable and go, okay, And I think in this process what comes up as well is that there's a wisdom in this process that our soul realizes that keeps pushing us to take that mask off and follow that journey. And yet at the same time, that wisdom doesn't always make sense to the logical mind. Makes perfect sense to the soul, but not necessarily to the logical mind.
Right. And, that's where it comes in, this very interesting concept of trust. And it's interesting to me because before we connected on the phone tonight, and as I told you before we came on the air, this is the first time I've ever done a show at night. And usually my night times are very inward times. I write. They're more creative times, not necessarily expressing outwardly in words to other people. And I felt excited and nervous at the same time. And I was aware of both sensations. And it was very sort of jarring. And I live in a townhouse, and I went downstairs, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to sit here with my cats for a few minutes. And there was a copy of my first book, which is called Meditative Magic, the Pleiadian Glyphs. And what those glyphs are is they are energetic configurations of particular patterns of energy, and they actually are a part of the story. If folks read The Keeper of the Diary, it tells a little about sort of how they came to be. But I found myself leaving. So each of these are geometric patterns that have a name and have a small and then a larger definition. And as I was just I just started to glance through them. And I found myself pulling out, and I haven't even looked at my own work for quite a period of time because I've been more involved in the newer book. And I pulled out this glyph, Trust, which is, the name of it is Trust, the Vehicle for Spiritual Wisdom, I thought. And all this was channeled. And I thought, wow, looking back at it, I'm always surprised at these things. I go, that's an interesting combination. How is trust the vehicle for spiritual wisdom? So I turn, it has these removable cards. So I turn the card over, and I haven't read it for a while, and it says, trust, more than any other glyph, is concerned with our ability to receive love from ourselves, our universe, and ultimately from Prime Creator. Many people, particularly those on a spiritual path, have confused trust with blind faith. The guides assure us this is a great misconception. Trust, as it applies here, has a quality of gentle allowance. This expanded definition of trust has to do with loving ourselves enough to move out of our minds and into our hearts. It is about our ability to believe that we are divinely protected and guided. When we allow ourselves to enter the frequency of trust, we provide a vehicle, an instrument of conveyance for the deepest kind of wisdom to energize and point our life's direction. When we make choices based within the frequency of trust, we are saying yes to life. We are allowing ourselves to believe that we are loved, that we are whole, that we deserve, and that we will be provided for. And it describes the image of the glyph. It says, you can see by the snaking lines of the glyph that trust is not static. It involves movement. In trust, we release our culturally learned patterns of control and move forward in our lives, knowing that our journey is fueled by the energy of spirit. Well, that's profound. That's all I can say. The idea that trust is allowing ourselves to love ourselves and to believe that we're loved.
And it is very, very profound. And trust is such a huge key for what we're going through on a universal level right now. I know myself that that's a place where I see a lot of miracles happen in my life. When I let go and I just trust the process, when I trust in that greater power and where it's guiding and leading me. And I think the fear is for a lot of people in that process is that they have questions whether they're being guided by divine presence or not. But it is such a key, and I have, particularly in recent times, just been amazed at the miracles and the things that are falling together the more and more that I step into that space of trust. And it's interesting where you brought those things up, because I actually was just part of a conversation in the last few days here that talked about this very thing, and I brought up the fact that this is not blind faith. This is an active participation in things. And so, yes, that being able to trust in ourselves, and it does really open up our limitations and our knowledge of ourselves to, again, tap into the hero.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it was amazing to me when I read this, because I haven't read it for a long time, and I remember being amazed at it when it came through years and years ago, this idea that trust, that allowing ourselves to trust is allowing ourselves to believe that we deserve to be loved.
Yeah.
I mean,
that
allowing ourselves to step into trust, to which I think of as a frequency, that everything, every emotion has a frequency, that the frequency of trust is about allowing ourselves to receive love and believing that we deserve it. Because isn't that the reason we don't trust? Because we think like, oh, something bad is going to happen. Something, you know, I'm not safe. So it's a very interesting combination of things to equate our willingness to trust with our belief that we are loved and deserve love. Because it's a little twist here, the idea of equating the ability to trust with our willingness to receive love. In other words, that it's sort of hard to put into words.
Right. Well, that sense of worth that comes through that you talked about, and I think that, you know, when you look at that in the sense of your character, Cassie, with all that she knew, there was that underline, and I think that worth is oftentimes very, very hidden. There was that underlying piece of saying, am I worthy of this journey that I'm on?
Am I worthy of having really good things happen? Or I let go, are just really bad things going to happen? Because basically, you know, without saying the words out loud, basically I'm not that good a person, or I don't really deserve that much anyway.
Mm-hmm. And that is so hidden sometimes, because I think there's plenty of times on the outward, just like Cassie, we're going, oh, yeah, I'm totally worthy of this. I know it. I've got it. And yet when it comes down to it and the actions and the journey starts, then we start questioning, maybe I don't have it. Maybe I'm not worthy. Maybe I don't know what I thought I knew.
Exactly. And I have to remember that there is so much cultural programming in all of us that we are totally not aware of. That's like swimming in the ocean, that you don't know there's water because all there is water. So there's so much programming that is a part, and you know, that our whoever we're our caregivers or bringer-uppers who they were subject to the same thing. I mean, it's generationally passed down. It's just part of the culture, certain levels of programming, so we can't see them. And a lot of that programming is, you're not okay. But it's invisible because it's kind of, it's so subtle that it's accepted without question. In other words, you could say it comes with mother's milk and your mother's mother's milk and the mother's mother's, you know, it's just a thing that's an invisible part of the culture that we don't see, so we don't know we're suffering from it. Because everybody is, to some degree.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of those things where we're also programmed, don't worry about this, don't think about that. And I think it's all of actually that hidden stuff that creates a lot of those underlying fears. Because too many times we've gone down a path and all of a sudden here's all these hidden agendas and hidden things that surface. So we're naturally taught to be in that space of fear, I think, a lot of times from that very programming. And we just come to accept it. It's kind of like when they change an on-ramp or an off-ramp or the bend in the road and they restructure it. And all the while we're going through going, oh, my gosh, this construction and look at the issues and I got to slow down and I've got to do this and I can't get through that. And then when the road is all done, we don't even realize or really remember the way it was before.
That's interesting. Yeah.
We're so programmed.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hard to sort of wrap our minds around the idea that everything that is changing is all connected. You know, we can talk about it from the structures of our society, whether we're talking about institutions, banks, whatever kind of institutions, you know, that are big, large structures, down to structures of thought. It's all connected. And those are all the things that have reached their end game that aren't working anymore. In other words, we really are reinventing what it means to be human or what we want it to mean to be human.
Definitely.
What matters to us. In other words, what's important? What is it that being human is really all about? And so it looks like it's all these outer things that are breaking down, but it's all connected, you know? It's like the inner, the outer. The outer is just an out-picturing of inner states of being, inner states of thought, or the outer conditions or the outer structures couldn't exist if we didn't hold the comparable feeling state. It's kind of abstract, but does that make sense?
Absolutely it does. And I think part of it is to keep in mind that nothing that we really need is going to break down. Only what we don't need will break down so that it can be transformed through basically a process of alchemy coming through.
Coming back together at a higher level of integration.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, becoming better, a higher level of integration from a lesser level. I mean, that's the part that, I mean, I think that, you know, we humans, you know, tend to compartmentalize things and not see that it's all one woven structure. And that's when things start to get scary because we say, oh, yeah, I want that out there to change. That's not right, you know, prejudice, whatever kinds of things we see out in the world that's not right, war. But we don't take personal responsibility for the aspects of ourselves that are at war within ourselves or within parts of ourselves or towards other, you know, members of our family that we feel competitive with or friends or whatever. It's all the same thing. So we can't stop the things out there that we don't like without changing in here.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I think that was very well said. And, boy, I could get off on a whole tangent when we talk about conflict within and the outer wars going on and all of those things. And people think, well, I have no power over this. And I'm glad you wrapped this in because people think I have no power over these people who are trying to control or the people that are trying to do this or the wars that are going on in the world. And you just nailed it right there, which was when we stop these things within ourselves, when we stop the greed within ourselves, when we stop the fear within ourselves, when we stop the war within ourselves, when we stop trying to control things, we will see these shifts in the outer world. There's no question about it.
Because everything is energy when it boils down to it. So whatever is going on inside of us is energetic and is affecting the world around us energetically. So it's kind of like whatever we're thinking or feeling is where we're casting our vote.
Exactly, and we have that choice to cast towards compassion, or we have that choice to cast towards judgment. We have that choice to open up and flow and be in the space of acceptance and loving and energy, or we have the choice to be in the controlling fear and other things. Diana, wrap up for us maybe one point that you would just love everybody to take away from this work with the Keeper of the Diary.
Well, I think you've kind of said it there. It would be this idea of truly understanding that how powerful we are, and that power is not power over, it's power between. So it's about the way the choices that we make on a literally a moment-to-moment level, and not to be hard on ourselves, but that really as we change ourselves, we change the world, and we really don't need to have a lot of focus, although it's fine to participate in outward events, and it's a good thing. The real battle is the inner battle or the inner journey, because that's how we change ourselves, and by changing ourselves, we change the world.
I completely agree with you on that. And like your character, Cassie, there are so many of us that think that we don't need to change and we've got it all, and that's where our resistance lies, is in that very thing. Diana, do you have anything going on in your work that you would like people to know about?
No, mostly just check out. I feel this book is so powerful because it works on so many levels that we've had some talk with some folks about movies. I would love to see it go that way because just like we spoke about Darth Vader, That is such a powerful medium. It sort of would bring me full circle. I would love for people to read the book, and I would love, you know, for people to hold that vision, or if you are in the film business, to look at the book with that in mind, because I think it's a book that works on so many levels that as a movie, or probably as a trilogy of movies, it could change so many hearts and minds. So that's my thought and my gift to the world, and really why I believe this story came through me, and I'm glad that I somehow managed to have the perseverance to stick with it through all its changes and the time frame, so that it could come out in the format that it did and contain all of these different levels. So I would just like to encourage people to explore it. You know, check out the website, look on Amazon, read about it, take a look at the Glyph Book, which is also on the website, and it's just called the Glyph Book, because these are energetic patterns that were gifted to me to share with the world. And again, I just feel that it's so much about making the connections inside of ourselves, and the changes that we need to see in the world all begin with us, and we can do it.
And give us the website again.
So it's the Keeper, www.thekeeperofthediarybook.com. And there's a couple videos. Check under the heading The Glyph Book. Check under Portfolio. See some of the images of the sacred sites, so that if you actually do read the book, you'll see these places that you're reading about and how powerful they are, and how Cassie has the experiences that she does at them, and how this ties together a story, even in fable form, of who we are as humans, where we've come from, why we're here, and just where it is we might be heading.
Wonderful. And I have to keep you in mind to possibly come back with us and share with us your work with the Pleiadian glyphs, because I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah. Another,
to
sure,
as well.
I would love to. I would love to. I mean, I was so struck today because that's not really been my recent focus, that I just happened to pull that glyph tonight, and I just, my experience always when I've been away from them is I'll look at something and I just go, wow.
It's wonderful. Diane, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and sharing with us your work and your time and your energy and your thoughts, and definitely some great things for people to grab onto in concepts tonight.
See, it's really been a pleasure, and it's been a delight to interact with you, because you spark things in me. I think we spark things in each other. And each time we do that, I'm sure connections get made for the folks who are listening. So it's been just a delightful experience.
Wonderful. I'm so glad that I could provide that for you. And I just want to mention with all of our listeners, next week here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I'm actually going to be doing my own show. I know I have guests on so much of the time, but I'm going to be delving into a show on manifestation. We have some incredible energy rolling around in the universe right now for creating and manifesting, and it's like Diana talking about making her book into a movie, and I think that that is a very positive thing for her to look at manifesting, because we see a lot of these things coming out, and we do need these stories, and we do need the visuals on them for the dyslexics and other people perhaps that don't like to read or just enjoy all of the things. And I do want to mention that some of the wonderful, incredible photographs that she took will be up on the YouTube version of the show as well. So that's worth taking a look at. But we're going to delve into a lot of different aspects of what influences our manifestation, what blocks our manifestation, what happens, why we don't manifest things when we're trying so hard to manifest them, a whole variety of pieces in this creation. And I certainly want to bring this show forward because I want people to be able to take advantage of the energy at hand and to really start to create and grow and develop their heart's desires and things that are going to feed the universe and bring their gifts out, because we need them. We need all of the gifts that people are offering out there. We need people to bring out their skill sets and share with us what's inside of them. And I want to mention, too, of course, all of my books are available to be purchased. You can check those out on my website, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge, thenumber1.com. The relationship books are just really insightful. I just had a friend the other day that, I shouldn't say friend, but client. Sometimes my clients feel like friends to me. Just mentioned the other day, she says, you know, I've been reading this book on relationships, and it just has shown me not only so much of what to do in my relationships, but also about life in general, and that's exciting to me when people make those connections in there. I've still got events going on for 2014 and going into 2015. You can check those out on my event site, jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And again, on my website, I've got videos on there. I've got archive shows, upcoming shows, courses that I have going on, events that I have going on. There's going to be a whole bunch of stuff getting added here around the end of the year and going into next year. Again, I'll be out in the Seattle, Washington area doing a full two-day weekend event out there, so you definitely want to check that out. That's going to be at the Autumn Equinox. Then around Halloween, first weekend of November, going to be out on the East Coast. There will be things happening in between those places, and you definitely want to stay on top of those and check them out. My August special, today is August 1st, so we've got a brand new monthly special up, 25% off my newest service, which is Dream and Symbols Interpretation. So this is going to be great for getting answers to your questions, understanding different aspects and things that are happening in your life, helping you to find direction or maybe understand the people and situations in your life. Check that out. Just go right onto my webpage, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge, thenumber1.com. All the information is right there on the homepage. Don't forget that we've got several shows here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights we have Darren Bucaire, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. Monday nights we have Randy Goldberg doing Vedic astrology, as well as some other topics in there, and sometimes he has some guests on the show. Tuesdays, Susan Weed sharing her work in herbs and natural plants. Amazing show, half hour, very short, packed full of information. And Wednesday nights we have our flagship show with Daniel and Janice. And then that's Main Street Universe. They address a lot of different topics. Matter of fact, just a couple of weeks ago, I sat in for Daniel and was on with Janice doing readings, so some fun things there. Thursdays, Queen Mother Amaku doing Wise Woman Renegade. Fridays, oftentimes we'll find Kevin Baird doing his work, walking on the sidewalk with his Horizon Oracles Journey deck, a deck that he created, which you can learn more about at templeofgaia.com. And, of course, Friday nights is Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Thank you so much for being here. This is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I just want to thank you, all of our listeners, not only here on Blog Talk, but those streaming live through PEN, known as Pair Encounters Network, StreamFinder and TalkStream Live, as well as those catching our podcast at iTunes and TuneIn.com, and those catching the YouTube version of our show. I look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into activating compassion. Don't forget that if you've enjoyed my show this evening, share it with others. It's going to be available at the same link in our archives. And I'm going to leave you with the song tonight, Yearning For, also known as Over and Over by Shem Shai. Thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week.
And if I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind. And to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with the season of change inside. And we are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon. Oh, deep inside, the light within, shining to show you it's here to begin. When all I have is all I need, I will soar to the edge of eternity. And we see it eye to eye, one within love to be for the divine. And we're walking hand in hand, caught in the balance of God and man. Over and over, life is your lover, learning to walk just a little bit slower. Whispering secrets, I bet you can't keep it. No turning back now, this time we'll reveal it. One to another, all will discover the essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart still yearning for.
Your heart is still yearning for. Over and over, life is yours.